Hey everyone, it's Lydia here. Welcome back to The Weird Years, the podcast where we get into the big meltdown-inducing questions of our 30s. We're in between seasons at the moment, so I'm releasing these bi-weekly kind of mini episodes, and they're based on ideas that you voted for on Instagram. So if you're not following the Instagram, do go over and get involved in those votings of the topics. And yeah, we've got a new season dropping in June. I'm not going to give an exact date because life is needing to be quite flexible at the moment with the new baby. But I can tell you that the next season is decision season. Dun, dun, dun. I should edit and add some sort of sound in there, but I probably will forget. So we'll just go decision season. Dun, dun, dun. Decision season. Don't know why I've developed a lisp. Anyway, today I want to talk about self-improvement. I want to talk about the pressure of it, the promise of it, and the point at which it kind of tips into something a little bit selfish, I think. Not intentionally selfish, but kind of inward in a way that actually pulls us away from each other. It's all going to make sense if you stick around. But I guess this topic has been in my mind and I've been pulling it apart in my head because in this kind of new motherhood journey, I obviously have very much reduced time, but I'm still wanting to achieve so much. And it's made me think about my relationship to self-improvement. And it's filled me with a lot of big questions that I've been asking myself and pulling apart. And I've got some hot takes, which I think you might find useful. So let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. You might hear self-improvement is selfish and think, okay, Lids, that is a wild take and a bit of a shit take, but stick with me, okay? And let me start with this distinction that I think gets really lost. Self-care is about restoration. It's about refilling. It's about recharging. Self-improvement is about optimization. And the two get marketed as the same thing, but they're really, really not. I am completely on board with self-care. Like, you cannot pour from an empty cup. I keep this in the front of my mind constantly, especially as a new mum and trying to grow this podcast and keep my friendships alive, maintain my health, maintain my looks, rebuild my looks, who knows. I'm honestly like teetering on burnout most of these days. So self-care has never been more crucial and I think it's incredibly important. I'm constantly thinking at the moment of where I should push harder with like the things that I want to achieve and where I need to pull back and cut myself some slack and, yes, spend time on that self-care. It's kind of a dance around self-care and just surviving, to be honest. I'm so far from working this out. I'm like, how can I get as much as I want done and then still make time for self-care, but also realizing how important self-care is. So it's kind of like a balance that I'm working on, right? And then there comes self-improvement. So that is the optimization part. And I used to be the queen of self-improvement. Like, I fully drank the Kool-Aid. I did a lot of the online courses stuff. I've read quite a lot of books. I just bought into that mindset that you should be pushing and pushing and growing and growing. But a lot has changed for me in the past years. I've kind of come to this realization that the modern version of self-improvement, this idea that we should be on this lifelong journey of very active, very deliberate, very kind of strategic optimization, I'm not sure on it, guys, anymore. This version of self-improvement is very ongoing and it's honestly as deep or as wide as you want it to be. I think it's often laden with things that you need to buy along the way as well. And it's as if maybe if you do all of this and if you invest enough and you go deep enough and if you buy enough of the things, there will be this one improved final version. And I think that's where cracks begin to show, like in my logic and the way I'm thinking about it. And also I've been questioning, like, how do we even get to this version of self-improvement? I truly believe that, like, before self-improvement became so heavily monetized, before there was like all these books and the YouTube videos and the online courses and the retreats and the challenges, like, God, don't even get me started on what's it called? Hard 75 or something. I think, Jesus Christ, that looks like a journey. Before all of that, improvement mostly came from experience, right? it came from doing, it came from interacting with the world. Like, the more you did, the more you experienced, the more you improved as a person. Like, the self improved just from getting out there and doing things. Like, you got better at socializing by being in the room at parties, or you got more confident, not from reading a book, but from like asking someone on a date in real life and not behind a screen. It feels like self-improvement used to be so inherently social, but also inherently limited by like the limits of real life, because you only had capacity for so many pursuits. Like, if self-improvement came from experience, you only had time for so many things to do. So improvement unfolded quite slowly and probably like relationally to what was going on in your life, and also in proportion to the life you were actually living. But now this like modern self-improvement, it's a marketplace. It really is a marketplace, and it's never ending, as I said. And I think women are some of the main consumers, to be honest. We're the main customers. We buy more self-improvement books and more courses, more wellness content than men. And I found in the data that we actually also start earlier than men. So our 30s are like the prime optimization years. Again, based on data, when we're investing the most in all of these different things, trying to self-improve. Whereas for men, the data shows that they tend to do it a little bit older, like around their 50s. So I just kind of, I thought that was an interesting thing, that we seem to be really the kind of the customers for this marketplace. And also for women, self-improvement is not just about things like social skills or financial skills. We've had like beauty rebranded as self-improvement. Think about looks maxing, okay? I'm going to use looks maxing as a term because I think it's suddenly become this term that's like icky manosphere, but women have been talking about looks maxing for ages. Not that like gross, icky version that, I don't know what his name is, the guy from the Louis Theroux documentary where he's trying to break his jaw or whoever. That version of looks maxing, which is on Harley Street, talking about things like facial balancing and talking about like making the most of the face you have, those kind of small improvements. I say small, they're not always small, right? But beauty has been rebranded as self-improvement for women. And I think to a degree, there is value in that when you look good, you often feel good. But we also have to take a little look back at the history of beauty and how we've got here. Originally, like, female beauty has been about the male gaze, for sure. It was about attracting a man, attracting a mate. It was about securing like status and security and a man that gave you those things. Then I think as women became more independent, there was a shift in the like phrasing of beauty into it being quite vain and quite shallow, almost like sinful to care and to be self-improving with your looks. Like, beauty for one's own want without like the need to impress a man, it's a bit less acceptable. And women have been shamed for decades about this, haven't they, right? If you spend too long improving your looks, you're seen as shallow and you're seen as vain. And I think now maybe the pendulum has swung again, because the world that we live in now, we have our own spending power, right? So beauty has almost been rebranded as self-improvement and as empowerment, but empowerment that you have to buy. So we're sold the things like tweakments, and honestly, I hate the term tweakments, but the expensive creams, the hairstyling, the clothes, like all these parts of beauty are a reflection of you trying to improve yourself, of self-improvement. And what a surprise, they come with a humongous price tag. And they also come with this new like social pressure that these should become the norm, like they are the norm and they should be upheld. That if you don't like look a certain way, maybe we say if you haven't improved yourself physically to the best that you can be, that you don't care about yourself or you don't have respect for yourself. And I think this way of thinking is almost exclusively reserved for women. Like, a disheveled mother is seen as, you know, having let herself go, but a kind of disheveled looking father is too busy to put time into these like trivial things such as maintaining the self-improvement of their looks. It feels very capitalistic and also quite one-sided that beauty has been rebranded as part of self-improvement. But obviously it goes way beyond this, right? Self-improvement is far bigger than just aesthetics. This marketplace that I talked about, it covers the mind, the body, the soul. It's kind of everything. It's beauty and fitness. It's nervous system research. It's breath work. It's meditation. It's spirituality. It's like certain types of coaching, manifestation, abundance mindset. Even like spirituality has been fully absorbed into consumer culture and branded as this self-improvement thing that you can get the meditation app or like, God, like, you know, wellness retreats that cost $5,000 a go, and that you can improve yourself. Your spirituality can be improved through those things as well. Courses promising peace for $1,000 or whatever. I mean, I've actually seen those like happening in Bali. It's crazy. The framing often shifts really subtly, right? We're no longer seeking peace or wisdom or that spirituality for the sake of it, for its own sake. We're now seeking it to optimize ourselves, that if we can be more spiritually aligned, if we can be more beautiful, if we can be all of these different things, we can ultimately be more productive, successful, attractive. So spiritual growth even becomes another form of self-investment that's like measured by outcomes. It's measured by how rested you are on your whoop or your glow ups or whatever. Even the language of spirituality has merged into this kind of language of hustle culture. I think when it comes to self-improvement, even inner work is sold as a product. It kind of becomes a little bit performative, maybe. I don't know. It sits badly with me that all of these things have become self-improvement and marketed just in such a like capitalistic way. So when we look at self-improvement, all the way from beauty through to spirituality, there is always a path that you can be improving and a pressure that you should be improving. And if you do XYZ, if you buy XYZ, if you do the course, if you put in the time, you can improve. And ultimately, it's going to lead you to more productivity and, you know, just doing more, I guess. And I'm not sure that's what it's about. It brings me to this question of, who is all this self-improvement for? And you might say, duh, like it's in the name, Lids, it's the self, it's self-improvement. But just stick with me for a minute, because if the true beneficiary of all of this, right, is you and only you, then is there not a point where if you put that above everything, that self-improvement is about you and that's the most important thing, there's a point where self-improvement becomes isolating and there's this risk that we put it above connection. Things like having the early morning ritual that pulls you away from your family, and oh God, I've so been guilty of falling into this, like thinking how I'm going to fit in my red light, my journaling, my meditation in the mornings, like when I could just be lying in bed with the baby. I'm not saying either is right or wrong, but it does risk pulling us away from connection. If you're skipping meals to stay at home, like you've got a friend meal coming up and you're skipping that to stay at home and be good. I hate the term good around food. I think it's very icky. But that idea of being good with your what you've eaten, if you choose to do that, again, you're risking the self-improvement becoming more important than connection. Or maybe you're choosing like not to jog with your slightly slower friend or partner or whatever, and you're going solo because you want to hit that personal best on Strava. Again, you might be choosing self-improvement over connection. And look, none of these things are wrong inherently. Like doing those things is not wrong, it's not bad, but it is where we need to be conscious that a kind of selfishness can quietly creep in. And I don't think it's intentional at all. I think it's just an outcome. I've personally found that the more I chase improvement, the more I almost create new ways to beat myself up for not being enough. Improvement inherently becomes a list of areas to focus on, right? Areas to improve. If you don't have anything to improve, you're not going to go into self-improvement, are you? You're not going to think that's important. It can become this list of reasons that you're failing, and I've definitely felt this, and like a reminder that who I am today just isn't like acceptable yet. It's not enough. And that is the premise, right? That who you are or how you are is not completely acceptable, like as it is, it must be improved. And that's how we're able to be flogged all of these expensive things, is creating this insecurity in ourselves. And this is the thing, with the pace of life that we have, we can't fit everything in. Like, we can't. We end up sacrificing real experiences and connection for these routines, these self-improvement routines that make us feel really safe and in control, but also make us quite separate. Like, if I'm spending all my time creating my perfectly smooth, beautiful baby dolphin body with my optimized investments from, I don't know, a finance book I've read, or my perfectly settled nervous system because I've done an hour of meditation, I might find that I'm choosing self-improvement over connection. So I want to come back to the question, who is self-improvement really for? Like, why do we want to be healthier, fitter, more emotionally regulated, more financially savvy? Like, surely the ultimate thing is to live longer and to love better and be better humans for the people in our lives. Like, it's not about the self. Is that not the whole point? Have I gone too deep down the rabbit hole? I'm not sure. It feels like that should be the whole point. Self-improvement should be about others. Recently, I've had this phrase, right, that's circling in my head, and it's about being in service to others. I think it keeps popping up on my Instagram in my little algorithms while I'm doom scrolling. And I'm really connecting to it. It's this idea of, like, being in service means acting with, like, genuine, selfless intention, like an intention to support or help other people and not expect anything in return, like being in service of helping them. It's definitely a big mindset shift from these kind of ego-driven actions, maybe, of being like, I need to be better, 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 whether that comes from, you know, insecurity or whether it comes from just, I want to be the best. But it's this shift from this ego-driven action into something more kind of altruistic, maybe placing the needs of others, like, alongside our own, maybe above our own in some situations, and allowing that to foster, I don't know, connection a bit more. And I don't mean in a martyr way. I'm not saying, like, burn yourself out. I'm just saying, is there a version of, I improve myself so that I have something to give away? Is there a version of self-improvement that's rooted in connection and not isolation and doing it alone? Because this is a thing, right? There's actually research that this idea of self-improvement can be selfish, or at least self-improvement can be detrimental and isolating. There is research of it. I was looking into this and I found some research that was around when we focus too much on the self, particularly things like being self-critical and, like, being too much of a perfectionist, anxiety and depression increase. So if you spend so much time being like, I want to be better, 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 it doesn't actually improve your anxiety and depression. It makes it worse. And that over-monitoring your feelings and, like, chasing self-esteem, constantly evaluating yourself, it can make these things worse and not better. And interestingly, I was looking at self-affirmations, you know, like the things that you say, like, in the morning of, you know, I am strong, I am, why did I am cool come into my head? That's so sad. I just want to be cool. I don't know. I am strong, I am worthy, whatever. I think those can be really great in my personal experience, but the research said that they can backfire for people with low self-esteem. They actually make, like, anxiety spike in people with low self-esteem. So I thought that was really interesting that some of these self-improvement tactics can actually kind of do the opposite thing. So the question becomes, has self-improvement become a socially acceptable escape route from the messiness of real connection? Because real connection, being in service of others, thinking outwards and not inwards, it's inconvenient. Like, it breaks our routines. It interrupts these, like, nice rituals that are all about me, and we love thinking about ourselves. Of course we do. It also, like, asks us to show up when we're tired, when we're, like, when we're burnt out, when we don't want to. That's kind of what the messiness of real human connection asks of us. It asks us to make compromises. It definitely pulls us out of this kind of curated inner world of smoothness and control and into this really like unpredictable world that is the real world. I think that to a degree, the messiness of real connection, it asks us to not be selfish. But that's the point, isn't it, right? That is the cost of human relationships. I've said it once and I'll say it again. Inconvenience is a tax of connection. It's what you have to pay in order to keep these relationships in your life and let them blossom and bloom and have all these people around you. Sometimes you have to turn up to the baby shower where you're sniffing weird chocolate bars in nappies because that's what that person wants you to do, okay? And you might want to claw your eyes out, but that is the cost of connection. Sometimes you have to schlep all the way across London because your friends moved to fucking, I don't know, Ealing, which is, in my view, the other side of the world. But sometimes you have to do it because that is the cost of human connections. And so in all of this, in thinking about, okay, where should I push? Where should I pull? Where should I be improving? Where is the value in self-improvement? I keep coming back to this, that self-improvement is genuinely only meaningful if it expands our capacity for connection, not if it replaces it. If all my habits and my rituals and my routines designed to optimize and improve myself and make me better, if they actually pull me away from people, then what am I really improving? Because are people and connection not literally the whole point of life? And what if this like pursuit for improvement actually drives us more and more inwards when we should be looking outwards a little bit more? It actually makes me think of that actress, Jemima Kirk. She played Jessa in Girls. If you haven't watched it, by the way, you absolutely have to. She did a Q&A on her Instagram a while ago and people were asking her questions and somebody said, like, the question was, any advice to an unconfident young woman? And she just said, I think you might, guys might be thinking about yourself too much. And I think she got a lot of slack, to be honest. I think some people got it. Some people thought like she was being a dick, whatever. But it's actually really solid advice. Like maybe we are all just thinking about ourselves a little bit too much. And maybe the real question isn't about like, how do I become my best self? Maybe it's about how do I become my most connected self? A self that's in service and not in isolation, a self that is improving inwards, but ultimately taking it outwards, a self that understands that being human is a communal project. It always has been. Like, that's the whole point. And look, I'm by no means against self-improvement in every form, but what I want to offer here is a different way of looking at it. Instead of using self-improvement as a whip to kind of slap ourselves on the back with and berate ourselves and not feel good enough, what if we look to getting back to the core of self-improvement, like the original OG version, the improvement that comes in its best forms from experience, from doing, from interacting with the world? Because you do not need the book or the expensive sauna pass. You actually need to go out and connect. And the more you do, the more you improve. And just what would improvement look like, you know, if we went into it thinking, I am improving myself so that I have something to give away. I love that so much. Like, I improve myself that I have something to give away. That to me feels like something to aim for and to think about. And I'm not saying throw all your routines out the window. I'm just saying, let's just think about, where is the drive for this constant self-improvement? Is it because we're being marketed at the whole time? Is it because it comes from an insecurity? Is it a need for control? Are we avoiding just the messiness of life and connection? Like, what would your week look like if each of us just thought a little bit less about I this week, about me this week, and thought a little bit more about we? God, that sounds like something that might be printed on a poster in like a live, laugh, love house. But look, this is my week's rambles. I think there's a really interesting opportunity to reevaluate our relationship with self-improvement and think about how can I improve myself so I have something to give away. That is what I'm going to leave you with today. As always, I beg you, if you could give a wee little like or review on whatever platform you're listening on, or actually even better, if you could share the episode or any episode that you've enjoyed to a friend or a family member or a colleague, someone who might enjoy the episode, it honestly is so valuable and it really helps me grow. So I would appreciate that massively. And yeah, we'll be back again soon. I have loved chatting with you. Okay, have a good rest of the week.